Wake up.
This is an O'Reilly Auto Parts Roadshow, live from Radio Row. Radio Row. At the Georgia World Congress Center, this is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio. Presented by Berryman Automotive Products and Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, rolling along from Radio Row in Atlanta, getting ready for Super Bowl 53. Patriots and the Rams, the old versus new angle is one people are taking, right? But one of the reasons is because Tom Brady, and the other reason is because Patriots continue to be here. Rams, young head coach, young quarterback, team that just got back to Los Angeles after a little over a generation of being removed from that city. So there's that kind of plays out. But at the same time, don't mistake this. This is still, again, we saw it last night in Media Day, how many of the Patriot fans came out and just kind of continue to look at this team and kind of embrace this team with sort of that same angle of, hey, everybody thinks we're not good. Everybody thinks we weren't supposed to be here. I still haven't found anybody who is massively surprised that the Patriots are in the Super Bowl. I still haven't found anybody that's like, unbelievable. I never would have guessed Tom Brady and Bill Belichick would have gone back to the Super Bowl. Play the angle up any way you want. Play that anyhow ever you want. Use it as motivation as you want. I still haven't found that person. But, again, last night was interesting because I was looking at Sean McVay while he was answering questions. And there's a likability to him that I do like. I don't know why, but there's something about the enthusiasm, the youthful enthusiasm. And Belichick, for his part, is the same Belichick that I've seen all the time. I remember being a young reporter back in the day when we used to do audio cuts with razor blade and tape. And I can remember my boss saying, hey, Patriots are playing the Cleveland Browns in the postseason. I need you to tape the press conference that Belichick was having. He was the head coach of the Browns at the time. And we're going to play it in our Patriots preview show. And so, but he wanted all the cuts to be a certain time. Like he wanted it to be like 10 seconds, 11 seconds, 12 seconds. And with Belichick, you had to cut these spaces. Like I'd have to mark, and then I'd have to cut, and I'd have to tape, and I'd have to make sure I could get a full segment. Like if he was talking about Drew Bledsoe, or he was talking about the Patriots, he was talking about whoever. I had to get it in a certain timeline, and he couldn't do it because he would go, well, he's a good player, and we'll certainly have our hands full. And you would go, oh, I can't have these gaps. I just have to cut this stuff. He's gotten a little bit better, but again, I love this angle of where the Patriots, again, same kind of team that's been here before, and then the Rams with the sort of youthful enthusiasm all meshed together. Ryan Leaf is going to join us next, former NFL quarterback, more importantly, what he's doing today, and we'll tell you that story coming up next on SB Nation Radio.
This is an O'Reilly Auto Parts Roadshow on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center, this is SB Nation AM. Presented by Berryman Automotive Products and Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Live from Radio Row, Atlanta, Georgia. Getting ready for Super Bowl 53. Our next guest, I am very happy with his story. I love what he's doing today. Ryan Leaf, former NFL quarterback, but what he's doing today has just been remarkable. Ryan, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
There we go, right?
There we go, yeah.
Good morning. Happy to be here. Broadcasting 101. We got it going.
Let me ask you right off the bat. Tell us a little bit about where you're coming, where you're going, and where you're coming from. In terms of what you're doing today, people remember you as a quarterback, and now you've really been able to do some things to help some people.
Well, I think I'm just kind of living the human experience, which is something you never get the opportunity to do as an NFL quarterback or then as a drug addict. Definitely. You're never living that human experience. So I think I'm truly getting to live that right now. You know, I got an amazing partner in my life. We have a little 15-month-old baby boy, which is the best thing I've ever done. And then I've been able to get out there and reach and try to help a bunch of people in this country who are going through something similar that I went through. And then also the broadcasting side of it, you know.
Yeah.
When you find that peace in an unchaotic life, you then get to refocus and remember the goals you set out to do. And that's become a big part of my life. And it's interesting because football was so toxic for me, but it's become, you know, a big part of what I do. It's also great to be able to tell a story rather than be the story, I think, and that's a big change when it comes to that.
You're the number two overall pick. You're coming out of Washington State. And I tell people all the time, there was a legitimate debate between you and Peyton Manning as the number one pick in the draft. That Ryan Leaf, who you were back then, what were you going through at that time? What did you think of yourself? What did you think about your career back on draft day or days after the draft?
Well, I thought I was better than everybody as a person, not just as a football player, but as an individual, which is completely wrong. You know, we're all flawed human beings trying to be better every day, and I didn't have that approach. But I also was very self-conscious. I was very insecure. I was going through, you know, I had a mental health disorder of depression and anxiety and those things that just were undiagnosed. And you weren't about to mention that to anybody because you didn't know what it was probably. And so it was much different 21 years ago. Talent-wise, to your point, was, yeah, we were neck and neck there. But talent everybody has at that level. It's what you do with it from Sunday to Sunday. And I kind of believe that the money, power, and prestige part was what success was, and I attained that. So I probably assumed it was going to be as easy as it was in college. Not that I didn't work hard, but it came pretty easy to me while I played college football in college.
Do you see today in sports, not just the NFL, but in sports, a more structure for athletes that may have been going through what you went through in terms of the mental health issue that wasn't there 20-plus years ago?
Definitely, and I think there's more athletes being outspoken. I mean, we've seen in the NBA side of things, Kevin Love and DeRon DeRozan really, really talk about it and address it in a public fashion. You know, we need the real, I guess, gladiator sport of football needs to be the same. We saw Josh Gordon really, you know, really face some things and step aside. I know that there's a substance abuse issue that goes along with that, which usually does. There's usually co-occurring substance abuse issues that go with mental health disorders. It's usually always the case in how you treat it, at least how you self-medicate it. So I think there's a more open-minded approach. I think it needs to be there needs to be a light shined on it even greater, because it's essentially the thing that attacks the athlete, attacks the elite athlete, where they don't feel like they can say anything because the stigma exists still.
In terms of your career, because, you know, you're a second-round pick, so there's a lot of expectations on you, but this league is a learning league. So the learning, the failure, does that exacerbate the problem? Meaning it just piles on, and the next thing you know, you're losing a bunch of games, and everybody's against you, everybody's wondering, and then in your mind, that's just exponentially growing.
Yeah, I think it spins out of control, right? It's just you're like one of the most loved people in the city, and a few weeks later becoming one of the most hated.
Right.
And you get resentful and angry too. You're like, you know, you're supposed to love me. Don't you know who I am? And that doesn't play well with anybody. They want to see somebody work really hard and play for them and be part of that city. And for me, it got worse and worse. And then I got hurt and missed my entire second season, which is supposed to be that really big jump of learning after a really rocky rookie year. And losing that season because of injury and the way I dealt with it was really problematic for any further success in the NFL.
I was just talking to Vance Johnson about this former Denver Bronco wide receiver, and he talked about, you know, a lot of times we on the outside don't see when the limelight goes away, when the attention is gone. For you, what was that like when the career was over and then Ryan Leaf just didn't exist for a lot of people in the public?
Yeah, that's hard. NFL quarterbacks are, you know, egomaniacs with a self-esteem problem.
Yeah.
That's essentially, we take things very personally. Those who don't usually find success, who develop the mantra, what other people think of me is none of my business. You just focus on what you do to get the job done, and then you have to have success from it. That was difficult, and it wasn't necessarily I was out of the limelight. It was the limelight then had dimmed, but they still referred to me as this failure, as this bust. And that I started to believe and internalize that. And in doing that, I didn't want to feel any of that anymore. And that's where the addiction side of things came. Because I remember when I played and I was in physical pain, they gave me this medication and it took away that physical pain. And in this instance, I was going to be taking it before my emotional pain, and it worked. It numbed me. I didn't feel any of it. And I just didn't want to feel anything. I hated feeling like a failure. I hated feeling like I let people down. I had a feeling like I wasn't good enough, and people hated me, and all those things that rolled into one. I just hadn't addressed it. I did it in an unhealthy fashion by self-medicating rather than seeking out counseling, seeking out professional help, those things, because I thought it was weakness.
So, and I'll let you tell it. You reach rock bottom, and then there's a moment where you have some self-reflection, and you say, I need help, or somebody is going to be helping. Where did it come from? How did it come from? We know you were arrested, so was it at that time, or was there a time before where you said, man, I got to do something here?
Well, I think that there was many of those times where I looked at myself and said, you know, God, you need help. You're just this junkie. And I wasn't capable of doing it myself. I had to be intervened with. Luckily for me, the local sheriff's department in my hometown essentially saved my life and sent me to prison. I didn't change when I went to prison. I just became more bitter and angry, I think, until, of course, my roommate, who was an Afghan-Iraqi war veteran, really kind of had a come-to-Jesus talk with me about how I didn't understand the value I had. And he suggested we start going down to the prison library and helping prisoners learn how to read. Who didn't know how to read.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I would ever be of service to another human being in my life. And that changed my perspective, and I knew it was going to have to be at the foundation. That means I removed myself from the equation completely. It could never, ever be about me again, ever. Otherwise, I was just going to be the same old jerk I'd always been. And so that was the transformation. About 6 months out before I was released from prison, those final 6 months got better, and then when I got out, it was about, you know, treating the real disease, and that was my mental health disorder, and then going out and trying to be of service to the general public and trying to help people who are dealing with the same things that I had dealt with.
And I was telling you before, I think one of the reasons I'm attracted to your story is for personal reasons, but also because I think there's so many people dealing with it, and you have such a large platform now just to say the story, because a lot of people know what you were, you know, what you were doing in the NFL and know where, you know, your struggles with that. But being a spokesperson for this, if you will, using that term, being able to publicly do this, being able to go, I'll share my story with anybody that needs it, that's also something, a skill that not everybody has. Not everybody can tell the story. When did you learn you had that, and when did you learn to develop that?
I don't know. I'm ever evolving when it comes to that, right? I think the bottom line is people always ask me, well, how do we be of service to another, you know, people talk about going, you go down to the mission or you donate clothes or money or something like that. And I'm like, yeah, that's like the service, what everybody kind of envisions. But like your story, regardless of what you've done in your life, what kind of adversity you've been through, you're a human being. So you've struggled and you're here and you're getting through it. So if the best thing you can be of service to another human being with is your story, you sit down and try to relate to another human being. And that's amazingly efficient in trying to help somebody get through anything. I tell my audiences all the time when I'm speaking that if I were sitting in the audience and one of you were up here telling me your story, I would be inspired and I would get something from it. It just so happens that sometimes when you mention the NFL or $31 million
right.
or something like that, it gets your foot in the door a little bit, and maybe some of the kids, younger kids, happen to turn their ear and listen up a little bit more, and we're grateful for that.
I know a lot of people who read your story, you know, to a younger Ryan Leaf, and I think that was really, you know, really touching. I will tell you this, you handle Twitter better than I think anybody out there. I mean, just the people, because people, again, they want to attack you, Ryan. They want to attack you as the quarterback bust, and they want to have a little fun with that, maybe in a malicious way. But you don't go down that rabbit hole with them. You are always positive, and you're still trying to reach out to people that silently need you to reach out to them.
Well, for me, it doesn't cost me anything, and also I was really sensitive to that, you know, in my past life, and so it's a perfect opportunity for me to practice those principles,
yeah,
in like all my affairs, and just be transparent and accountable, and then try to show them the mirror, I guess, and maybe one person goes, you know what? And I've had guys respond and be like, you know what? Yeah, man, you're a cool dude. That was, you know, I don't know why I did that. And maybe you take a second look at stuff. Because I was that guy too, right? I was a judgmental, angry, fearful person. And I threw it at people all the time. And I was resentful. And none of that gets you anywhere. It just makes you angrier. And this doesn't cost me anything to respond to somebody with 5 followers who wants to make some asinine comment. Because maybe it doesn't cost me anything, like I said. And it may turn around somebody's life in a different way. Because I know how grateful, and I know how much value my life has now because
right.
of it. So I try to share that with anybody I can.
Ryan, great stuff. Where can people contact you? How they can read more about your story? Anything you want to?
Yeah, you can reach me at Ryan D. Leaf on Twitter, and then you can go to my website, theryandleaf.com, and check in on what we're doing. doing a lot of speaking engagements, calling college football games in the fall, working with recovery communities. Just started with a friend of mine, a business called Believe Podcast, where we're based in L.A., and we have every sports team podcast on this network, which
wonderful.
Is pretty, yeah, it's pretty cool, and I'm doing the Chargers one.
Very good.
Yeah.
Ryan, great talking to you. You're doing God's work. Stay in the broadcasting business, too, because you're good at that as well, my friend.
Thanks, sir.
You got it. Ryan Leaf joining us here on SB Nation Radio. Continue coverage from Radio Row here in Atlanta on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to an O'Reilly Auto Parts Roadshow on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center, this is SB Nation AM. Presented by Berryman Automotive Products and Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Again, glad you could join us here in Atlanta, Super Bowl 53 Radio Row. Okay, last night, walked into the arena as the Patriots, I took my little dinner break, and then I walked into the arena last night when the Patriots were being introduced and the Patriots were being talked about. Big crowd for New England last night, and they all started chanting, beat L.A., beat L.A. It's a famous Bostonian chant, but I want to tell you the origins of that chant, because it may not be where you think it came from. In the 1980s, the Boston Celtics and the L.A. Lakers met in a number of NBA finals. There was a beat L.A. chant by Boston fans when they would play the Lakers, but that's not where that chant originated from, and I'm going to give you a little bit of context. This is a little one of those bar trivia things you get to use to impress your friends, so bear with me, because there's a little bit of a story here. In 1981, the Celtics played the Philadelphia 76ers in the Eastern Conference Finals, and the Celtics trailed in that series 3-1. They had Game 5 at the Garden, which they won, making it 3-2, and then they had to go to Philadelphia to win Game 6 in order to bring the game back to the Garden to win Game 7. They did that. They were able to go to the Spectrum in Philadelphia, beat the Sixers, and then they came back and beat them in Game 7 at the Garden, going on to the NBA Finals, where they played the Houston Rockets then and won Larry Bird's first championship. The same exact thing happened in 1982. They met the Sixers again in the Eastern Conference Finals, and again the Celtics found themselves down 3-1. But Boston fans thought this would be the same thing last year. Game 5 of that series was held at the Garden, and as the Celtics were winning that game, I know because I was there as a young lad, the crowd started chanting to the Sixers, "See you Sunday. See you Sunday," because game 5 of 6 of that series was a Friday night at the Spectrum. Game 7 of that series was Sunday at the Garden. And so Celtics fans thought that there was going to be a repeat of what happened in 1981. Down 3-1, we'll come back and win the series. So they were chanting to the Sixers, "We'll see you on Sunday because we know we're going to Philadelphia and we're going to continue this series and you're not going to win there." And again, that's exactly what happened. Boston went to Philadelphia on that Friday night and beat the Sixers at the Spectrum, setting up another Game 7 at the Garden for the Eastern Conference Championship. Now, this is where it gets tricky, and this is where the beat L.A. chant comes from. Whoever won that game was going on to the finals to play the Lakers. But instead of the Celtics winning that game, the Sixers throttled the Celtics in that game. In fact, there's a famous Sports Illustrated cover where Dr. J is jamming a basketball over a bunch of Celtics looking up, and it says, "Dr. J jams the Jinx." He said, "Take that, Boston. Dr. J jams the Jinx." This game was over quick. This was not close. This game was over, and as the clock was winding down, Billy Cunningham, the Sixers coach, was starting to take his starters out of the game. And just started to let other players come in, take his starters out. The game was totally in hand. And as he was doing that, Boston fans started to erupt in the chant of beat L.A., beat L.A. And that's where it came from. It came from Boston fans telling the Sixers, please go to the finals and beat the Lakers. We are not going to be able to do it, but you go do it. And they didn't do it. The Sixers lost that NBA Finals. They would win the finals in 1983, but they did not win in 1982. But because that chant is so easy to do and kind of flows off the tongue a little bit, they would do that in the finals after that when the Celtics and Lakers met for the first time in 84, and then they met again in 1985, and then they met again in 1987. Beat L.A. and the T-shirts and all of that became a symbol of the Boston chants to their team to when they face the Lakers, but that's not where it originated from. It originated as a plea to the Sixers to please beat Los Angeles, because we may hate you, but we hate the Lakers more. And if you're going to walk away here with the Eastern Conference title, please do us all a favor and go beat the L.A. Lakers. So that is the story of how Beat L.A. became a Bostonian chant. So there you go, Ron Culver. That's a bit of useless bar trivia for you if you're ever wanting to impress friends for about 5 minutes.
I'm always a fan of useless bar trivia.
Useless bar trivia is the way to go. So there you go. And I remember being a kid. I remember my father got tickets late to that game, Game 5. And I think my mother, like, picked me and my brother up off the school bus or something. I can't remember. But I remember we had to go immediately down to Boston for this game because, you know, they had tickets and we went to the old Boston Garden, man. It was a lovable dump, but Ron, it was a dump. It really was. Like, you could smell urine. Like,
yeah, wasn't. I mean, the only saving grace to the old Boston Garden was just the floor, right?
Oh, the parquet, yeah, but even the parquet, like, there used to be pictures of, like, here's three quarters that fit between the gaps of the parquet at the Garden. The place stunk like sweat. It wasn't air conditioning, but barely. It was like a hot box, and there were, like, the steps were really steep, so, like, you always felt like you were going to fall walking down the stairs to your chair. I remember one time I was a kid, we went to a game, and I was playing with this screw that was in the wall, and I just kept turning the screw the whole game, and it finally came out of the wall. I got it to come out of the concrete. The building was so old. So that was the Boston Garden back in the day. But, boy, those Celtics. Larry Bird knew that parquet better than anybody. He knew where to bounce that ball. He knew where, like, everywhere the dead spots were. He knew everything. So when the Patriot fans are chanting that at the Super Bowl, and you can hear it if they're winning, and you can hear it through your television, when you're at your party, go, oh, you want to know where that came from? And they'll go, oh, yeah, from Celtics, Lakers.
And they're actually doing it for Philadelphia. They're doing it for Eagle fan, right?
Yeah, that's right. They're doing it for Eagle fan. Exactly. So that's where Beat LA came from. They used it at Fenway Park this year against the Dodgers.
No, that's true. No, I just you know, it's one of those things. It's just synonymous with Boston versus LA. It doesn't matter what the sport is. I mean, if we're ever fortunate enough to guess to have Boston Bruins versus LA Kings, we can expect to hear the Bruins fans. Same thing happening.
Yeah, you'll hear it. You'll see T-shirts that. I mean, it's funny, if I was, I don't know, they probably do because the people who design this stuff are way smarter than me, but the way the Beat LA shirt used to be designed, it was a green shirt, and it had Beat LA, and there was this, like, a big Shamrock Celtics logo in the middle, and I would have done the same design, exact same design, with make it blue with the Patriots logo, and where you couldn't tell the difference other than color and logo, and people would eat that up. They would buy up
in a second. I'm surprised nobody's
done
it. You're probably...
Boston, every Celtics fan I know has a Beat LA shirt. I mean, it's nuts. So I'm sure somebody has done this. There's no way that idea is on my stupid little brain. There's no way I came up with that, because that's got to be being done now. But it's just a little piece of Bostonian trivia back when the Celtics and Lakers used to play. I mean, you want to talk about, again, Ron, you and I talked about this when the Super Bowl matchup was here. You want to talk about an exact duplicate of the images of two teams going into the Super Bowl than we had Celtics-Lakers in the 80s? Right, it's the same exact thing.
Yeah, you had the old guard versus the new up and comers. I mean, maybe with the exception of Kareem.
Yeah, with the exception of Kareem,
he's just the outlier there.
Like I was saying yesterday, it's like growing up as a kid, like L.A. people, they don't even have jobs. All they do is surf. I mean, literally, it was like L.A. was like another planet. Like to grow up in New England in the cold and the bad weather, but. Fiercely loyal teams.
Like,
and
for example,
the Showtime Lakers was crazy.
For example, the polar vortex is hitting Atlanta, right? Boston's probably going, oh, this is a nice spring day, where L.A. is like, my God, throw another log on the fire.
Where's
that trash cans we always see on fire? We need to stand around that.
Exactly. That lunch pail Celtics team, right? Like, oh, man, the blue-collar guys play. That's the same image we're getting here at the Super Bowl, right? Bunch of old-time Grizzly veterans at this Super Bowl thing. And here's Sean McVay. My God, he's barely shaving. I mean, you know, that's the kind of approach, right? I mean, slick back hair.
Hit
Pat
puberty
Riley.
Recently.
Exactly. Although, you know what? Even at my age, I'm developing a little man crush on McVay. I was very intrigued by some of the stuff he was saying last night. He's very likable. He's a likable head coach. So... Nevertheless, there's your Beat LA history books for this show on SB. I don't do that very often, but when I do, pay attention and write it all down. SB Nation Radio.
is an O'Reilly Auto Parts Roadshow on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center, this is SB Nation AM. Presented by Berryman Automotive Products and Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And again, hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio or at Ron Culver, and that is Ron with two N's, by the way. Two N's on Ron. Michael again, we found out Michael is jogging in Brazil, and he's listening to the show. He's from Atlanta, but he's going to be out of town for the Super Bowl. But he said that he's our morning jog on the beach. Boy, that's kind of cool. And he had time in his jog to text me about my incorrect analysis of the Spygate situation.
He might have too much time on his hand right now.
Michael, God bless you, because I would not be able to type if I was jogging and I paused. I would be collapsing.
Nor would you want to if you were on a beach in Brazil.
Exactly. The idea that you stood up for the Patriots, because, again, I said that they were taping practices. That's not correct. They were taping signals.
You know what?
Hey, Michael wanted to correct it as a Patriots fan. He stopped his workout on the beach in Brazil.
Here's the thing, Tony.
Just to correct me.
You said they were awesome. Taping practices. He told you what they got busted for.
That's true.
How do we know?
Good point.
Yeah, he could have been
Michael,
they could have been taping Michael, practices.
Michael, you direct your response to at Ron Culver, okay? Because I am willing to. I'm willing to admit I made a mistake. So you direct your Patriot support response to at Ron Culver, and that's Ron with two N's, Michael. But you know that already. But well done. I mean, well done that he's in Brazil listening to the show and he's texting us sticking up for his team even on wherever he's. I don't know if it's business or pleasure that he's on down there, but
yeah, do you think
good luck. Thanks. Good with that.
So, do you think he feels bad that he's missing out on the polar vortex hitting his city?
Yeah, I know, right?
I mean, he's probably, I'm imagining
beautiful
shorts
Brazil.
And tank top on a Brazilian beach.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
summer down below the equator.
Yeah, sun just rising. I mean, beautiful, beautiful morning. And just knowing that, man, you know what? If he didn't cover his plants, they're dead.
They're gone. They are long gone here. Oh, by the way, I did want to mention that I got a text from our good friend John Peterlin out in Cleveland, who we've had on a number of times to talk Browns. I guess he was listening in yesterday. He texted me that to download the app and use the scooters, not the free scooters, but the available scooters around town. He says they're fun and I would enjoy them.
There you
go. And they're relatively cheap. So I guess I have to download the app in order to use these scooters, which thankfully he told me, because I kind of looked at one yesterday like, how does this work? Do I just put in a dollar?
That's those moments. I wish we had a camera on you.
Oh, I know.
It literally would be like a caveman just looking like, how do I open this thing?
Exactly. That's exactly what I would be. I look at the scooter and I'm like, and that's exactly. I don't
Tony
know.
Want
I
go.
Tony want go fast. Tony no walk anymore. That's exactly right. Oh, especially in the morning. Like if I can get my hands on one of those, it's a little less than a mile walk. I'd grab that scooter.
Yeah, and you're in luck because with the polar vortex, you don't have to worry about those fuel lines freezing because it's electric.
No, you won't.
Battery so might die, but that. Hey.
Yeah.
What happens if the battery dies? You just leave it?
Just leave it.
Leave it in the middle of the street.
Well, I guess
somewhere.
I'm going to walk now, or I'll find another scooter. Right.
I mean,
they're littered everywhere on this. They're everywhere. I mean, it's incredible. I got to be honest with you. It's rather ingenious. I mean, they're just all over the place. And you have, I guess, you scan the code, I don't know how it works. And then off you go, and it's electric, and you just get on it, and there's a brake pedal, and
right. Well, you have another assignment. You have two assignments. You have the nap pod that you have to try out.
Yeah, I did try the nap pod yesterday,
there we go.
And that was awesome. And now I got to do the scooter. But I'm going to do the scooter at 5 o'clock in the morning or 4:30 in the morning when I start walking over here, because I don't want anybody to notice me and then ask the fat guy for help. Like, I don't need that, okay? Like, I don't want to be figuring out the scooter, and then some young kid goes, "Hey, old man, you want me to help you with that? You want me to help you with the technology? It's a little over your head. This is a scooter. This is how you turn it on."
That's like, what I don't you just turn like, to him and say, "Hey, listen, whippersnapper, I'll program your VCR."
Exactly. Yeah. I'll rewind your VHS tapes. I'll be more than happy to do that for you.
I'll be kind. But, rewind.
Yeah, exactly. I am going to use this, one of these scooters, before I leave Atlanta. So I'm going to absolutely do it. Yesterday at the media event, again, that was at Phillips Arena or State Farm Arena, whatever they're calling it now, where the Hawks play. Todd Gurley was asked in a big, you know, kind of this big scene. I think Deion Sanders was doing the interview. Asked him if he was hurt. He says, "I'm not hurt. I'm healthy." But can we all be honest here? There's something wrong with Todd Gurley, right? I mean, if the NFC Championship game was any indication, there's something not right with Todd Gurley. Now, maybe it's right by Super Bowl Sunday, but how little he was used with the Super Bowl on the line in the NFC title game is really concerning, and it's got to be concerning to Rams fans. This is one of their best players. He got hurt late in the season. He missed the final two games. Fine. But then he looked good against the Cowboys, didn't play particularly well at all, or play at all against the Saints. And now there's a question leading into the Super Bowl. What are the Rams and what's their running game going to look like? Is it C.J. Anderson, really? Or is it going to have to be a Todd Gurley, more utilization of Todd Gurley in the running game? It's a question I'm kind of curious about, because when I look at the Rams offense, I think in order to beat the Patriots, everything has to be working for them. I don't think they can beat the Patriots with just C.J. Anderson and a very limited Todd Gurley. I think they need Gurley completely in this game against the Patriots. So, again, they're keeping it under wraps and they're keeping it tight. Gurley said, "I'm feeling good. His practices have been going well." All of those things that you would expect a guy to say leading into the Super Bowl. He's not going to tip his hand as to how hurt he is, and even in an interview setting, he's not going to do any of that. We get it, but still, the questions are going to be out there. How much is Todd Gurley's effectiveness going to be in this game against the Patriots? Because I think it's got to be there. I don't think they can beat the Pats with just C.J. Anderson, and C.J. Anderson has been a fantastic addition to this Rams team. When you think about his story and Anderson's story, Broncos, Panthers, Raiders, couldn't really find a home, couldn't really find a spot, couldn't be used in the right way. Whatever those reasons, those teams could not use C.J. Anderson, and the Rams could, and he rewarded that with blasting yardage since arriving in Los Angeles. At one point, he was averaging 140 yards a game, I think leading up into the NFC title game. But I don't think that's going to work against the Patriots. I think Gurley's ability and his elusiveness is going to be on display. And even if he does play, how effective is he going to be? So, these angles that we're going to get here at the Super Bowl are all important, right? Jared Goff is, first Super Bowl, jitters, all of that. We all know the story about Troy Aikman puking but then playing fantastic. Tom Brady, been here many, many times, unfazed by this environment and this setting. All of those different angles, but I think the Gurley angle is a big deal. I'm curious because, again, why wouldn't you use him effectively if you could use him effectively in a game at the Superdome? And yet, very limited, very, very limited in a game with the Super Bowl on the line. So, again, against the Patriots, I know that there's too much speculation about his health. But Shannon Sharp on Twitter, and Frank Schwab pointed this out at Yahoo, he said, "Gurley has heard, his body language tells me this." All right, whatever that means, Shannon Sharp, but I'll take your word for it. I think he's hurt, too. I can't imagine Sean McVay just doing it on principle.
Yeah, and I hope it's not one of those scenarios where, he's hurt, and then it comes out, if they were to lose or get blown out, then it comes out like, "Oh, this is why." That's why it's almost like, hey, come out and say it ahead of time. And so that way, like almost like a Terrell Owens situation where we knew he was hurt, but then we can all sit back and go, "Man, that was miraculous what he did on a, broken ankle."
Oh, right. Exactly. Like Anderson last night said, quote, "You got an all-pro back who's been a first-team all-pro for 3 years, but actually he's two, but What he brings to the game, how special he is, you're always surprised you're going to get more touches or carries than a guy like that. So Anderson, even Anderson was surprised in the NFC title game that he got more of the workload in the run game than Gurley. And I just can't imagine this was philosophical. There's no way this was philosophical. McVay utilizes all his weapons and utilizes them properly. If Gurley isn't hurt, then he gets used more in the NFC title game. There's just no way around it. I don't think there's a higher thing going on here, right? Obviously, Sean McVay wasn't saving him for the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was on the line, right? I think there is more to this than meets the eye. And I think that Gurley and how he talks this week, how he acts this week, I think is going to be maybe overanalyzed, but analyzed nonetheless. Because I think that, he's an important factor to what they do offensively. You put up 30-something points a game, and you have the leading rusher on the team. That's one of the reasons, because this is not a pass heavy offense. This is they run the ball and they pass the ball, but they do it well. They do it well in both counts. So I think this is going to be a big factor come Super Bowl 53. It's Tony D and Ron Culver. We're live at Radio Row in Atlanta, Super Bowl 53 on SB Nation AM.
Hi, this is Mike Herzing. Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. I get emails every week asking why SUVs are outselling cars. Well, it's really about utility. SUVs are great people movers, they're easier to get in and out of, and they ride a little higher up. Of course, SUVs will go places that sedans can't, and they'll do it loaded with people and gear. Now, new SUVs get great fuel economy, run great, and are comfortable on the highway. And just because it's an SUV doesn't mean it has to be a big one. Compact SUVs have become big sellers, too. But, folks, if you really love sedans, and this SUV craze means that there are great deals on the cars that you want. Car companies have thousands of unsold cars. They're still great cars, but since they're slow sellers, prices are slashed. And the prices on discontinued cars are really crazy. You could say that sedan buyers are in the driver's seat when it comes to car deals right now. This is Mike Kersing. Let's Talk Wheels, brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more tips, go to letstalkwheels.com or find us on Facebook as Let's Talk Wheels.
Choose a new path this year at the Jeep Start Something New event, where you'll find great deals are just the beginning of the great adventures. Make a grand entrance in the Jeep Grand Cherokee, the most awarded SUV ever, because a brand new year means you deserve a stylish new look. And nothing looks better than confidence, which you'll find plenty of in the Jeep Compass. With over 70 standard and available safety and security features, if it's a new peak you're looking to conquer, find the SUV recognized for reaching the top in the Jeep Wrangler, awarded the 2019 Motor Trend SUV of the Year. Or, if all you need is a getaway, start your road trip in a Jeep Cherokee with up to 31 mpg highway. But no matter where the new year leads you, start it with a great deal at the Jeep Start Something New event. Jeep Grand Cherokee has received more awards over its lifetime than any other SUV. EPA estimated 4-cylinder 4x2. Actual mileage may vary. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
You're listening to an O'Reilly Auto Parts Roadshow on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from Radio Row at the Georgia World Congress Center, this is SB Nation AM. Presented by Berryman Automotive Products and Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, Ron, remember I told you last week that I saw the documentary on the Fyre Festival?
Yes.
Yes, well, apparently the models that advertised for that, quote-unquote, or promoted that on social media, I think advertise is too broad a word, Bella Hadid, Kendall Jenner, Emily Ratajkowski, they're all being subpoenaed by a judge for this failure of a festival.
That's awesome.
This is awesome. You got to be careful, I guess, promoting things. But at the same time, how much responsibility do you have if a company says, we want to pay you to advertise, you advertise, and then that's a failure? Are you responsible for that? I mean,
did they take compensation for promoting it?
Yeah, I guess they did. I think Kendall Jenner got like $200,000.
Get out of town.
I'm tired of this. I am so tired
of it. Damn, I need something like that. I'll promote the hell out of stuff.
Look, if you pay a guy, usually like in advertising, if you pay a guy like $1 million to advertise, like, there's some work that has to be involved, right? They show up to a set of a commercial. They show up, you know, they got to record a radio spot, or there's a little effort here, right? When we were talking about Peyton Manning and his commercials, you got to set up a set. He's got to show up. You got to put the makeup on. You got to do all those things. Like these models are just tweet bank account. I mean, that's it.
That's it.
It's like a half a second.
It's
unreal.
Maybe throw a little Instagram.
It's unbelievable.
Little Instagram selfie saying, on my way to fry or fire.
And
whatever
that's it.
It's
and, that's it gets, it. And there's six figures that gets poured into your bank account for half a second worth of work. It's an unfair, cruel world for
unfair.
Those of us who didn't jump in on the social media craze.
See, we were
so
talking
early.
Earlier about, you know, hating people for their, you know, success. I mean, and they actually worked hard for the sex. Why are more people hating these girls?
Exactly. See, the thing about it is, like, my kids know all about, like, tweeting and Instagram and all that stuff. So they're living in a world where that's just going to be norm. Guys like us are like, wait a minute, hold on. How much is somebody getting for what? For what? How they do what? That's insane.
You turn to your
that's
kids
insane.
And say, hey, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
somehow,
you're doing
some
it wrong.
Way, you're doing your tweeting wrong.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So, again, they're going to have to, I guess, be in front of a judge talking about this failure of a festival that cost people thousands and thousands of dollars. And somehow these models
wait for those
are going to have to, are going to get asked about all of this, about what happened. Ah, an interesting world we live in. Super Bowl 53.